Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Hey, you know how Black Friday sales are the best savings of the year? Well, what if we told you Wayfair's bringing Black Friday to July? That's right. Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is Black Friday in July. And it's on its way. Starting July 24th, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, way more doorbuster deals on top products and 24-hour surprise flash deals. Oh, and did we mention free shipping on everything? Everything. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer and the best time to make your home even more you. But it only lasts 5 days, so don't miss out. Mark your calendars, then head to Wayfair for up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the summer. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale, July 24th through 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
All right, buckle up. We're going into the case of Brian Koberger with some fresh new court filings. And, you know, when one thing doesn't stick, you got to keep trying. Try again. And that's certainly what Ann Taylor is doing. And this time, let's just say the defense is throwing a curveball into left field. Forget arguing about DNA matches or, you know, looking at stars. Koberger's team is now saying he was set up. That's right. He's going full on OJ in this case. Believe it or not, it was planted. It was set up. Somebody really doesn't like Brian. That's right. According to them, the knife sheath with his DNA on it planted like a bad alibi in a cheap detective novel. Somebody went in there. They put his DNA on it, put it under the murder scene. Of course. Why would anyone think anything else? Which raises a multi-million dollar question. Is this a last ditch effort to create reasonable doubt, or could someone have actually framed Koberger? Today, we've got defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis with us to break it all down. Eric, in your experience, how often do we actually see a frame job in court on something like this? And what does it take to sell that one to a jury?
In terms of how often people are framed, really depends on who you ask. Yeah. You know, you ask a prosecutor and they'll say, hey, that is a fiction. That largely doesn't happen, you know, maybe 0.1% of the time. You ask some defense attorneys, especially ones who've been around for decades and decades, and they'll say, hey, look, man, I've seen it and we've proven it. So the frequency of it is debatable, but it's a difficult road to hoe for the defense, in part because they have to. The next question in terms of you tell someone you're framed, the question will be why? Why would they come at your guy? Why Koberger? Yeah. Why frame him for a quadruple homicide he didn't do? And Koberger doesn't have the same kind of answer that OJ or other folks who have alleged framing do.
No, I mean, we've been talking. I mean, the Delphi case we talk about a lot. That looks like, I mean, not necessarily planted evidence, but just lack of looking at evidence. This is one where it would be, something was planted. They're making the accusation essentially and throwing it out into the ether that somehow the knife sheath, the DNA on it that only belongs to Koberger, was planted by someone. Who? We don't know that. Why? We don't know that. These are questions a jury's going to want to know answers to. You can't just throw out there, oh, he was framed. Why? If you were throwing this out there and you are Ann Taylor, how are you going to present this?
You know, I think that the way she could be looking at it is that, hey, there was this catastrophic tragedy in this town. Four innocent college kids were murdered and stabbed to death in a gruesome way. This town needs justice. This is a small town. This is a college town. It's a small police department. There's a lot of pressure on the police department to find a culprit. And when they thought that they had some evidence against somebody, they wanted to put their finger on the scales and ensure that they would secure this conviction so the community could have some peace and closure. And that's what they did to my client. That could be one way Ann Taylor argues it.
Seems like a stretch. Especially considering this wasn't like a 5-year investigation. I mean, they got Koberger in the time frame of things, you know, relatively quickly. It wasn't the next day. Excuse me. It went in a couple of weeks, and there was a lot of questions at the beginning of how well are they doing their job. There was a lot of criticism back then. We were one of them raising the flag, going, "What the hell's going on over here, guys?" And it turned out a lot. They just were holding their cards very close to the vest. So that doesn't necessarily play in the favor of that argument where there's this frustration and all roads have led to nothing. Because they did. They had stuff. They were following it. They ended up going to Pennsylvania and checking out the garbage and then comparing it. And the only DNA that we know of in this case that is completely matched to Koberger and no one else, how would you go about and get that DNA to plant it? And why Brian Koberger? How are you going to find that? And how are you going to get this specifically on that knife sheath in that exact spot? It's not like it's just like taking like, this is kind of gross that I even have this here, but I cut my hand the other day. It's not like you have a Band-Aid, the person, and you're just like, let's smudge it around on the sheath and there's DNA there. No, I mean, this is very specific. It's right where a thumb would go to open said sheath. It seems like quite a stretch. Are we just getting really desperate here?
You know, law enforcement would have to go through some investigative gymnastics in order to accomplish what the defense is claiming they did in terms of planting this for the reasons you just mentioned. You know, I think that this is, in any death penalty case, which Koberger's case is, there's an element of desperation on behalf of the defense. You've got to come with everything in including the kitchen sink. You've got to just leave no stone unturned, raise all plausible arguments you can possibly raise. And perhaps that's a part of what's going on here. And maybe they're hoping that, hey, we put all of these questionable arguments together, do they accumulate to, you know, one potentially credible argument? Maybe.
It's a big maybe. They've already gone down the road of everything else. Obviously, this is before trial. So some of it matters, some of it doesn't. I'm going to ask you just how much this matters. Is they've already run it down going, oh, the science is bad on that. Well, it could have been something else. Or they're running everything. And it's not just that it's not his DNA on it or it's flawed methods. Now it was planted. It's basically saying it is his DNA, but somebody else put it there. When this actually goes to trial, how much of their scheming can actually make it into court? I mean, how many of these, well, first they said it was this, then they said it was that. What do you guys think, jury? Because they don't seem to know themselves. I mean, can that be brought up in that sort of a way?
You know, some judges are very permissive when it comes to defense arguments, especially in a homicide case, especially in a death penalty case. Sometimes they'll say, hey, this argument seems a little whack, but it's a serious case and I'll let defense do their thing. Other judges require a credible showing that there is some evidence buttressing especially such an inflammatory allegation like planting evidence like that. And so will the judge on this case require that much of defense before this even gets to the jury? The judge could require that. And the jury, it's possible, might not even hear about it. Defense doesn't get to go in there and just say, hey, you know, we think the man on the moon did this. There's got to be evidence supporting their arguments.
They're pretty close to that, though, really. I mean, they're just like one step away from like that. Like, he loves the stars. Look at. We also have recently, because the judges said, okay, we need to be a little more transparent on this. So we've seen the text message string come out from the surviving roommates. And it puts into perspective what went on, I think, into their minds when you really take into account their age, the way they communicate, and all that. I'm not going to break down, you know, why I think there's nothing nefarious there. because I don't think there is. I just think it's, you know, young, inexperienced people at life that were in a crisis, spooky situation and didn't really know the gravity of it. But there's the bushy eyebrows comment that's in there that we know is in there in the string of texts right away. And of course, they're arguing, well, that can't be put in here because they were in shock. They clearly were not in shock. You can tell that by their string of texts. And once they find out their friends were dead, they sure as hell were. But at that point in time when bushy eyebrows was brought up, they were a little spooked. There was somebody in the house they didn't quite know. There was some weird ruckus upstairs that they didn't know what was going on. But eventually they felt safe enough to go back to bed and competent enough to say, bushy eyebrows. It's not usually a trait one's that's just going to make up out of thin air and put out there. Especially, it would be quite a specific thing to see on someone's face and to stand out if he's wearing a ski mask. That would really be an interesting feature to go, despite the ski mask, bushy eyebrows. Kind of makes it even more of a stronger point, I think, which is probably also why Ann Taylor wants it removed. All these things she wants removed, is there a chance in hell for it to be thrown out?
Typically, witnesses are allowed to testify as to their personal observations, their sensory experience, their perceptions based on what they're seeing. That's, in fact, the basis of what's called foundation for one's testimony. They saw it, and this was how they viewed it and what came into their head. Bushy eyebrows is a pretty distinct characteristic, and Koberger happens to display that characteristic. And so I think that the witness is absolutely going to be allowed to testify as to those observations. And defense can cross. They can cross on it and say, oh, weren't you in shock? Oh, you know, when you're in a crisis, maybe you're not perceiving things as accurately as when you're not, or whatever. They can ask about that, but I don't think it rises to the level of making it inadmissible.
Should Koberger have gotten one of those eyebrow trimmers right away and just, let's get rid of these, so like nobody can say that about him? It'd be funny if he goes into court the next time and he's missing eyebrows. Like, what happened here? Accident. It was just nothing. I've always never had eyebrows. I've always looked this way. The DNA underneath the fingernails, that's another thing that the defense was, you know, trying to bring up, it seems, here for a little bit. I don't know if they're going to keep going on that, but the DNA of three different people under the fingernail of one of the victims. I don't know. I'm always cleaning my fingernails. I always have like something around here where I'm like, it's an obsession. And there's, you know, just go throughout your day, you get stuff underneath your fingernails. And I'm assuming probably a lot of DNA. This, you know, go to the store, touch a railing, you know, just inadvertently scratch your hand on something. You will very likely get DNA under your fingernails. Just how often is it that at any given time we have other people's DNA under our fingernails, but we're not the victim of a violent crime?
Sure. I mean, it could be a very innocent explanation for that. Like you said, just picked up. You're in college town. There's kids everywhere. You're hanging out at parties and socializing and everything else. On the other hand, defense can certainly argue that there was a physical altercation here. And oftentimes in a physical altercation, there is scratching and an exchange of biological material, including material that gets lodged underneath fingernails. And could that be evidence of someone who was involved in a physical altercation? It certainly could be, and it's certainly something defense can argue.
Yes. I mean, I guess it can create some reasonable doubt, because as of our technology today, we do not have a way of breaking those three different DNA profiles down to say definitively, here is who they all belong to. Now, 10 years from now, I wonder if that will be better. There's a lot of cases we look back on and go, well, we didn't have that technology then. Now we can look at this in a lot clearer light. So I'm curious 10 years down the road, what exactly we're going to find in that. When we're getting closer and closer to a trial date here, we're seeing a lot of things thrown against the wall. Does it tell you, and obviously this is a capital case, when we've seen like theory after theory after theory being thrown out there by the defense, what does that tell you as a defense attorney? And even more so, when you were a prosecutor, when you saw things like that happen, or as a defense attorney, if you ever feel like we got to keep throwing things out here, what does that tell you about the strength of a case?
It tells me that if there was one overly compelling defense, You ride that horse off into the sunset. You don't want to dilute the potency of your defense by saying, oh, and it also could be these five other things. At least that's one strategy. Now, some folks just like to, you know, throw everything at the wall and hope that something sticks. But sometimes what that telegraphs is that there is not one main compelling defense that is going to win the day on this. And we've got to try to have some cumulative effect of all of these questions, all of these potential doubts to hopefully rise up to reasonable doubt. And so that's kind of the way that I would view that.
Anything that you've heard from the Koberger camp that makes you think this will be successful on their part? I don't want to say an easy sell, but even like a palatable sell to a jury.
You know, certainly there are some cards that Koberger's team can play. One is some people would argue that there's not a distinct compelling motive for him to do this. Now, prosecution's going to say that he was sort of stalking these women and on social media and stuff like that, and certainly that factors into motive. But was there a motive for him to go and slash up, you know, four people whom he probably had never met before? That's one card. The DNA evidence of other folks under the fingernails, that's another card. But overcoming the DNA on the knife sheath is going to be difficult, and I don't think the planning argument's going to get him there.
What are you most interested in seeing in terms of discovery, evidence, all that has not been made public yet? What do you think could really seal the deal here against Koberger? And in theory, what is there anything out there that you think maybe is in the back pocket of Ann Taylor? I would think we would have heard it by now, but let's just say there's something out there. Either way, what do you think we could come up here that could affect this case in either direction?
There have been some hints in some of the public reports that I've read that allude to more of a buildup on this case than everybody knows about. More actions that Koberger may have taken. I mentioned earlier that there's some indication that he was at least visiting their social media profiles or possibly trying to interact with the victims on their social media profiles. At least that's what I've heard. I haven't seen the actual social media data. But if that information does exist, if there's more information about how this culminated, how things escalated, and about Koberger's actions before he allegedly committed the stabbings in a way that is consistent with killing four people with a knife, I think that could be very compelling and seal the deal for the prosecution. For the defense, that's a tough one. I'm not sure.
It's kind of like
I can't think of a card that some joker in their back pocket that I can't conceive of that's going to show he's innocent.
Surprise, we have video of him in Hawaii with Chad and Lori Daybell, and they're all on the beach together having a great time. We just decided, well, we didn't think that was compelling enough, but we'll show our cards now.
Yeah, nightmare blunt rotation.
Exactly. There's not a lot that looks good here. The knife itself, the purchase, is something I'm very curious about. If it happened, if there is an Amazon receipt or Target or whatever the hell he may have bought it at, that seems like that could seal the deal pretty good. There are some people out there who have claimed that they have inside knowledge that is there. Again, just an allegation, but from some pretty trusted sources. Obviously, that'd be pretty damning if, in fact, that was there. And the fact that you have Ann Taylor, is it normal for someone to get ahead of something and say, we want the exclusion of his Amazon searches, and there was a ton of online things they wanted out, Google searches, everything, anything that like could point to, hey, maybe he bought this knife, or any sort of other conversations about what may have happened that may be out there in the ether. They're requesting early on that should not be into evidence. If there's nothing to hide in those areas, why would you be requesting that we can't look at your Amazon search history? There's plenty of crimes out there where no one even asks for that because there's nothing to see there, and you would know that on a defense end. But if you know there's something there that may not look very good, Of course they're going to request to not have that in the case. By even stating that let's not look at Amazon, does that tell us there's something at Amazon?
It certainly could. On the other hand, some defense attorneys are very adamant about the rule of law and about the Fourth Amendment's protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. And perhaps Ann Taylor believes that there was not enough evidence to get into Amazon searches. There's a big controversy now with the government saying, oh, we think a person did something, so let me look at every aspect of their phone, their entire digital footprint for their whole life. And defense attorneys are pushing back and saying, hey, we do not want to establish that trend in criminal justice. That could be another reason why she would want to exclude those items.
Is that a legit argument, though? I mean, look, it's just another way of looking at information. In the past, before we have digital receipts and a far more detailed way of looking at everything we purchased, it would have just been a warrant to go and search a property and look for physical receipts that maybe somebody has in their trash, in their counter, in their drawer, wherever, looking for that exact same data, but we just now happen to store it in different ways. Are things like that they're asking for because they're digital, is that really a crazy request or something that, look, this is how the world works today, we better just get along with it and accept that if we committed a crime, there's a lot more places that we leave evidence than you would have had in 1982?
Absolutely. And that's a fair argument. And many courts have really cited that rationale for allowing broad digital device searches. On the other hand, we also don't want a system where somebody suspected of committing a crime, presumed innocent, and the cop thinks like, hey, I bet there is some evidence as to motive in his house. Judge, let's go look at every single thing in this house, every compartment, every closet, every drawer. They're probably going to find something. That's not what meets the level of articulable probable cause. Mm-hmm. And that principle can be translated to a cell phone. Some folks are saying, hey, we don't want to allow that broad access for those reasons.
Is it that broad on a cell phone? I mean, it's dialed down to communication. I mean, if there's something that involves the crime and you find it, great. I mean, it's one thing if you go out. I mean, it certainly does open more windows to blinders and just taking in information that you think fits a situation, even though it may not, because obviously that does happen sometimes. The more information you have, the more convoluted it could be, but also the more telling it can be, the more concrete it can be, simply because we have more things to take a look at.
Oh, certainly. And I think one question on that becomes, does the government have a right to take a look at it? Certainly they would want to. And certainly there are good reasons for thinking that, hey, we want the government to look at everything and get the most comprehensive cache of evidence that it can. On the other hand, you know, some people, their cell phones are very intimate to their lives, that maybe they're texting somebody about having AIDS or something, or maybe there is information that they are with some rogue political group. And that information can also get into the hands of the government if we allow too much unfettered access. And I think that is the concern on behalf of the defense bar.
So you can't have AIDS and you can't belong to a crazy government group. That's the new rule. I'm kidding. but I get what you're saying. Yeah, where it could go into the wrong hands, or could be looked at as something entirely different that really has nothing to do with the case, that I guess one could put into some other category and use against someone. It's just there's so many angles on this case and so many directions that it, I guess, in theory could go, but it feels like it's narrowing even more by the day as we get closer and closer to a trial. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, thank you for your insight on this ever crazy growing case.
My pleasure.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.